Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we're going to talk about you. That's right. We're going to be talking about you. How can you do better in your life? In what area? Let's talk about health, because we have such a major upheaval regarding health insurance that's going on in the country at this time. And we need to really start taking responsibility for ourselves instead of looking outwardly. What can we do to really empower ourselves as individuals so that we're going to know that we're doing the best we possibly can for ourselves? Well, my guest today, Dr. Matthew Edlund, is a physician that strongly believes that we have a lot to contribute to our own well-being. His book, Healthy Without Health Insurance, Protect Yourself, is easy to read. It is something that's very down-to-earth and basic, and I know you'll enjoy listening to him. He has a very good sense of humor. Dr. Edlund, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, and I mean, anybody that says, I hope that I am the person you are calling, I call them. I mean, gee whiz, that's very humbling. Dr. Edlund, you are the director for the Center for Circadian Medicine, and you're the author of The Power of Rest, The Body Clock Advantage, Designed to Last. You've been an Ivy League school professor. You are a syndicated health columnist, hospital medical director. So you're living in the environment of which there is so much chaotic confusion and frustration.
Yep.
For you as a physician, I'd like to ask you a question. What is the biggest irritation, or I'll use the word frustration, that you find you have in dealing with patients?
That they don't look at it from the standpoint of their own health, but mostly in terms of their own health care. They see themselves not as agents, but sort of as victims of a system which we know doesn't work. That people don't see that how they live is going to be the biggest factor in most cases in determining how well they're going to feel.
With all of this that you are experiencing, you say right at the beginning of your book, health should be the goal of health care.
Right.
And I think that that is so significant. I mean, Hippocrates said that years ago, and food be your own medicine, all kinds of things. So this is not a new issue with human beings. This has
been around for a few million years, and the issue's been around for a few million years, except we haven't probably been talking about it for maybe 50 or 60,000 years.
Right.
The really weird part is how much people really seem to believe that health is related to their health care. And if you look at the statistics on that long term, you might add with health care 2 or 3 years to people's lifespan, but you might add 10 or 15 years based on how they live. And watching what's going on in America these days, I really begin to wonder. I watch things like how people eat and how people sleep, and when I was growing up, those things seemed to be second nature. Now I don't think people even really know how to eat or sleep anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We've grown so used to the idea of ourselves as machines and treating our bodies as machines that we no longer recognize that we're organisms that have extraordinary powers of recuperation and regeneration, which we could use on our own. But we tend to look at it from the standpoint of what our cholesterol levels are and what our blood pressure is rather than what we can do to really make us healthy. And my definition of health is not just that your numbers are good. It's not the medical definition of absence of disease. The World Health Organization definition is complete physical, mental, social health. And I would add to that spiritual health, because I think people really do want to connect with something larger than themselves. And that's what we need to be aiming for. We need to be aiming for well-being. Because when we got a healthy population, we're going to have a much stronger economy than we do right now.
Oh, I agree. And I think that the mind-body-spirit connection, and you've just touched on this, is extremely important. But there is that positioning of personal responsibility, and I love in your book how you point out how fabulously amazing the human body is, and that in doing its repair work, it's extraordinary. And I quote from your book, "The pumping proteins that let you read this sentence are made, used, repaired, destroyed, and recycled in 60 to 90 minutes. Take away skeletal structures, and most of you is new in a matter of weeks. And food is a far larger source of body-changing information than the ingredients we read on a box. Give the body the right information. It will regenerate properly. And so we should be able to enjoy a very healthy, vigorous life. I mean, this is real."
Right. Most of us will. A lot of it is going to be luck. That's why you have health care, because people are going to be unlucky, because 5-year-olds are going to get sarcomas, because 20-year-olds are going to get hit in car wrecks. You need a health care system because sickness is what happens to a lot of people, and the fortunate should be able to pay for a health care system so the unfortunate are taken care of. But the real trick is to not get sick, and a large part of that's under our control.
I concur. I really, really agree. And life happens. We're never going to get rid of medicine. We're never going to get rid of the need for physicians, because life is the way it is. Nothing is guaranteed in our experience. And the more we learn about the human body, I think the more understanding we have. I'm just in awe of so many of the developments that have occurred within just the last 20 years that have just made tremendous differences in the lives of people. At the same time, we get all of these other overwhelming statistics, and we're creating a bunch of hypochondriacs, I think.
We're also harming ourselves in many ways in terms of what we do in daily life, things we really don't have to do.
Mm-hmm. True. Now, I was impressed with a piece of information you have in your book, and that is that the longest-lived population in the world is in the United States.
Yep.
I thought it was in Tibet somewhere with a bunch of yaks.
I doubt the way things are going in Tibet these days, that the population's living very long. They have a very harsh time. But the longest-lived populations in the world are Asian-American women in that subtropical paradise of non-stress, metropolitan New York City.
That's phenomenal.
Well,
why?
And it also tells you how much that medical care doesn't matter. What matters is lifestyle. Lifespan is about lifestyle. I mean, if you've got a group of women in Suffolk County, Asian American women, and their expected lifespan is 95.6 years, that to me is mind-spinning. When I started medical school, there were papers that came out that said populations will max out at 85 years. They haven't maxed out at all. They're living longer and longer, and it's all based on how they move, how they rest, how they socialize, how they eat. Basic, ordinary stuff makes this huge difference. You don't get that in the media. In the media, you usually get hype. You know, here's this new fabulous diet. You can jump into a cold bath every morning, take 2 cups of coffee, exercise endlessly, eat no carbs, and miraculously you'll lose weight. But what are you going to do to your overall health? Why aren't we talking about people's well-being? Why aren't we talking about their social well-being? These are the things that really matter.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I would say that is very indicative of these women, these Asian women, they have a network of associations. And that's been proven many, many times. People that belong to churches or organizations, when there's interaction with other people and they're feeling as if they have a purpose, then there is a sense of enjoyment. But one of the things Americans are very guilty of, and I can raise my hand on this, I'm getting better, but we are workaholics.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not okay to have downtime. It's not okay to just do nothing. We've got to be productive.
That's the machine view of health.
That's right.
That's the machine view, that we're machines, and machines decay, and machines rust, and machines fall apart. Whereas, in fact, we're organisms. We don't rust. We don't fall apart. We continuously regenerate. And that's one of the problems why people don't want to rest, because they see themselves as machines. Look, we work with cell phones. We work with computers. We work with cars. We're surrounded by machines all day. So we start to think that we are machines. But when I turn off my computer, it's off. When I go to sleep at night, I haven't turned myself off. All I've done is set myself up to rebuild and rewire my whole brain and body. We're doing that all the time, and we do it different ways throughout the day. We're never inactive. We're constantly rebuilding, and we're doing it at such a dizzying rate that if we actually saw the process, we would sit in awe. But we don't see the process. We see our hair grow. We see our nails grow. We don't see our brain grow. And that's what's so critical, because these changes that are taking place are so swift and so powerful, but they're internalized and we don't see them.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about food for a moment. We're very fortunate in this country and the Western world to have an abundance of food. I've been in situations in different parts of the world where food was not available.
Yep.
And I've seen both sides of the coin. I'd say I've seen everything, but I've known both sides of the coin. I've known poverty. I've also known abundance. And abundance, obviously, is something you prefer over the lack of food. And it's something that when I walk into our stores, I'm just in awe of how there's things from around the world that we are able to have access to, and how locally in this country we have so much wonderful fresh vegetables, etc. And I was really intrigued with how your attitude is about food, and that you gave information by a Dr. Nora Volkow, and she said that foods act in the brain in similar ways to addictive drugs. She found a way to do it. She was curious about this. How does food work on the body? Mm-hmm. And she said that foods filled with sugar and fat produce the same reward patterns in the brain as cocaine. Well, any woman that loves chocolate knows what you're talking about there.
Lots of people love chocolate. See, that's what you do with evolutionary quirks. You make money on them.
Mm-hmm.
If you give a rat soda water, the rat will not only prefer that to cocaine, but the rat will basically just keep on taking the soda water regardless, and will take in virtually no other nutrients. It'll take in a certain amount of protein, a certain amount of fat, just the minimum amount, and just keep that spigot going. Oh, we're built this way. We're built for chronic intermittent starvation. That's one of the reasons we love the foods that we do. They don't necessarily love us back.
The brain and red blood cells. This is so important. I know of a lady whose husband has Alzheimer's. And she said that in this physical situation, she's noted with him, and he's not obese, he's not that at all. This is a guy that was really active, so it's a very sad thing to see happen to him. But one of the things she said that really perks him up is they have afternoon tea, and she always makes sure that she serves him like a cookie or something like this. She said it seems to make his brain better.
Sure.
And you note that sugar in the form of glucose is vitally necessary for the brain. And anybody that's ever suffered from low blood sugar, which I have, low blood pressure, low blood sugar, sugar and salt are something, boom, it instantaneously works in the body. Tell us a little bit about that.
That's one of the reasons people have to eat breakfast if they want to control their weight. The brain and red blood cells operate exclusively on glucose for about a week. You'd have to starve people for a week before they could use fat. So when we wake up every morning, we're basically digesting our muscles to create glucose for our brain and red blood cells. So that's one really important reason for having breakfast in the morning. We also metabolize food much more effectively in the morning. We have higher insulin levels in the morning. But food itself is information. We don't tend to think of it that way. We see information as stuff in a book or pixels on a screen. But information is what the body uses. Information is what the body processes. We basically process information. We know about that in terms of our economy now. Our economy is becoming an information economy, a knowledge economy. But we don't tend to see that our bodies, not just our brains, but our whole bodies, are processing information as well. And food has many, many meanings. If you put people in a single room and you give them the same meal at the same time, if the room is red, they will eat one-third more than if the room is blue. Mm-hmm. And every time you bite into a meal, you're eating the genetic material of that animal or plant that's there. And that genetic material, in many cases, will come right into your bloodstream and start changing the gene expression of you. That's been shown now that there are things called microRNAs that directly change gene expression that come into our bloodstream based on what foods we've been eating. So there's an enormous amount of information that comes in with food that has nothing to do with proteins or carbohydrates or calories. Foods have thousands of different substances. They're all affecting our lives. They're affecting our mentation. Even the sequence with which they come in will change how they get processed. So if you really want to know how to eat, you look at the populations that have lived long. You look at what they have in common. And then you can make some sense about what a sensible cuisine really is.
I love this one. It said, most of us are fatheads. And I'm going to let you fill in the rest of that one, because I don't know that if you called somebody a fathead, generally they'd take that as something as positive. What are you implying when saying we're all fatheads?
Well, if 60% of your brain is fat, that kind of makes you a fathead, doesn't it? But it's a very special kind of fat. And that's the point. I mean, you know, for a long time, the Department of Agriculture pushed the idea, no fat, don't eat fat. And it was absolutely crazy, and it ended up making people heavier than ever. We have essential fats that we need to survive, but it turns out that the lining of cells, to a great extent, is made up of things like cholesterol. And mm-hmm. that's where the communications go on, and that's where the interactions go on, and that's where a lot of the most critical things to life go on. So, yeah, you need fat. And if you've got the right kind of fat in your brain, you're actually going to have faster, more efficient communication. And that's one of the reasons why you want kids, for example, to eat fish at least periodically, because there's certain things about fish fat that seem to make it easier for some of those transmissions to occur in the brain. So people used to say, you know, you are what you eat. To a fair degree, that's true. But what you do with that food and how you use it is the really big issue.
It really is. And you bring out some vegetables in particular that you say are especially nutritious. And, of course, the first one on your list is kale, and it's one of our favorite vegetables, and any of your dark green leafy vegetables, but especially the kale. And you talk about celery, sweet potatoes, lentils, fava beans, black-eyed peas, green peas, carrots. Vegetables have a great deal, and when you combine that, as the Asians do, with a little bit of meat, usually in the Asian culture, the people didn't have very much meat. Meat was really something that was a luxury for them in many instances, just like it was for early Americans. I mean, very few early Americans had a whole bunch of meat to eat. It just wasn't available.
So, that's why you have to combine foods. The Chinese figured this out about 3,500 years ago, that if they could put a bunch of different grains together, they would end up with the essential amino acids and fats that they needed. Of course, they didn't know what it was, but they knew they had to combine foods. We have to combine foods as well. And one of the reasons I wrote Healthy Without Health Insurance and put it out as an ebook for $2.99 is I wanted to explain to people that they could eat healthily and cheaply. People think they have to spend a lot of money if they're going to eat healthily, and I'm trying to point out to them that that's not the case at all. You want to not only save people's lives, but hopefully you want to save their checkbooks as well. And there's just a lot of great stuff that's produced in this country, but we have bodies that are built for intermittent starvation. So people say to me, why am I gaining so much weight? And I say, well, in many ways, the question is, why isn't the whole population overweight or obese? Because in this country, we've added 20% more food into the population since the 1980s. We're eating 20% more than we used to eat. And we're eating totally different stuff than we used to eat. In 1970, about 0.4 pounds of high fructose corn syrup would come into the diet each year. Now it's over 38 pounds on average. Now on average we take in alone 145 pounds of added sugar. This changes everything. Food information changes what we are and what we do. And I think that the Japanese in particular have a really smart way of doing this, which is just to put different colors on the plate. If you get different colors, you get different nutrients, you get different vitamins, you get different minerals. I'm not talking blue M&Ms here. I'm talking real foods. And when people can eat real foods and combinations of real foods, they will generally feel a whole lot better.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. And that's why your statement in the book, when you eat, think color. You want an array of color on your plate. What I like about your book, Healthy Without Health Insurance, is that it's informative in a way that enables people to understand that, one, they don't have to be stuck, and two, they really have a lot of very, very good options. And, of course, having natural foods as much as possible, like your salads and your vegetables and various things like this, it's very, very important. But something that I have been observing is that many people have digestive problems. And I am learning about people that have colitis and diverticulitis and so many other things. And, of course, it's all related to diet. And stress can be thrown in with that, too. But this is something that really can be fixed quite easily. As a physician, do you find that those patients that typically have those problems are, you know, under undue stress, that they are basically like workaholics, and if they change their diet, they can literally get rid of this kind of a problem?
I think it can help to change their diets for a lot of reasons. And one of the reasons is that we have not paid attention to the fact that humans are ecosystems. We're a whole, basically, whole zoo of different organisms unto ourselves. The latest survey of biology in the gut found there's 10,000 different species and subspecies that live down there, and there's about 100 trillion bacteria in your gut, and there's only about 10 trillion human cells. Not only that, but we've only got about 20, 25,000 genes in us that are individualized, that are separate genes. There's somewhere between 5 and 8 million bacterial genes that are individual. So our bacteria have an enormous impact on us, and a lot of the things that you're seeing now is that, yeah, ulcerative colitis, asthma, all kinds of autoimmune disease seem to be very powerfully impacted just by your bacterial population. So that's one of the great advantages of having combined foods. If you take in different kinds of food, you'll find that you'll end up changing the bacterial population down there. And I think if you treat your bacteria right, they're going to treat you right. But there are other much more bizarre things that have come out. In animals, if you give a certain amount of lactobacilli, bacilli that will eat milk, that will digest milk, if you give it to mice, the mice that get the lactobacilli are much harder to stress and much harder to make look depressed just by changing one bacterial population. So I agree with you. I think that food has an enormous impact on people's stress, but not in the ways they normally think. We're changing our own ecosystem based on what we ingest.
The aspect of exercise. I have a member of my family that says, whenever the urge hits me, I sit down until it passes, and it drives me nuts. Because I say to the person, no, you've got to move. You've got to move. And they go, no. And, of course, they feel like I'm pushing, which I am to a degree. But I am and always have been an avid walker. This is something that's really great. But you made a point that I thought was really amazing. If someone is 30 pounds overweight, all they need to do to lose the 30 pounds with apparently not changing their diet in a dramatic way, they don't have to starve themselves or anything else, is to walk an extra hour a day, actually walk. Does it make any difference if they go fast, if they go slow? I mean, what's the deal with this? That's too simple.
That's data that comes out of the, we actually have a government agency that looks at dietary information, and the people who were able to lose 30 pounds and keep it off year in and year out added an hour's worth of some form of physical activity, mostly walking, to their day. And there's a lot of arguments about what the speed has to be. The Australians have basically argued that the difference between the quick and the dead will be 3 miles an hour. They found that when the older folks they were looking at, if the ones were walking at 3 miles an hour or so, and they were looking at 65-year-old men, they found that at 75 and older, there were a lot more of those guys than the ones who were walking a bit slower. I think that intense exercise, in the sense of really putting it all out, in many cases can be very helpful, even in short bits, even in 20 or 30 seconds at a time, because that will reset insulin sensitivity in some people. That'll make it easier for insulin to do its job. That'll make it easier for you to produce less insulin and effectively have, in the end, less belly fat for a lot of people if they can do it. So I think moving around regularly is the key, but on occasion, really intense exercise will help as well. But the biggest game in terms of physical activity is to just make it part of ordinary life. I have a standing desk that I write at home. When I'm talking on the phone, I'm pacing all the time. Rather than call people down the hallway, I much prefer to walk over and speak to them. If people watch TV, they don't have to sit down the whole time. You can use an exercise cycle if you want, but you can even take out a stepper or just a large book and step on, step off, step on, step off while you're watching a program. You don't have to be passive in this. You can take control by making physical activity part of your most ordinary activities. And that's where I think it really works best.
Well, I'll tell you, Dr. Edlam, I think that your book, Healthy Without Health Insurance, Protect Yourself, is marvelous. Now, you mentioned that you have an ebook. Do you also have a website?
Oh, yeah, I have two websites. One is wegethealthynow.com. And the other is my old site, therestdoctor.com. I make my living as a sleep doc.
Oh, I see. Okay, so that's two websites, wegethealthynow.com and therestdoctor.com.
Right,
wonderful.
And I put out a newsletter every week with at least a couple of new articles.
Fabulous. Yeah. So there you go. You're going to be able to get a newsletter. But his book is so basic, and he also has an e-book that you can download if you're interested. Dr. Matthew Edlund, thank you for being my guest today. It's been a delight having you. Enjoy the rest of your summer, and I look forward to having you again as a guest when you come out with your next book.
Thanks so much. I just hope that everybody can regenerate their bodies well, because that's something that really is under our control, and that's the marvel of the human body. It's the best technology we've got.
Well, the information that you give in your book, Healthy Without Health Insurance, plus a little bit of information regarding the cost of health care and knowing what it is. We had a member in our family one day in the emergency room, $31,000, and we have no idea where it's going to go from there. That was just the first day in the emergency room. But this is something that people need to be aware of, so why not take a positioning of taking charge of your life and understanding that you can be healthy. Life happens at times, but why not be proactive in your own wellness and avoid what can be just absolutely so costly, if you possibly can. Thanks again, Dr. Edlund. Go check out his website, wegethealthynow.com or therestdoctor.com, and you'll find out more details about his free newsletter as well. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Topperson will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Topperson. Topperson is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Topperson or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Topperson, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. I'm so delighted you're able to be with me today. If you would like to chat with me, telephone number to call in to is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. By the way, when I mentioned the factor about hospital care, I was not exaggerating. A member of our family, we are just finding out what the bills are. Now, being in the emergency room, it was that's $31,000 for one day, and we don't have all the billing yet. And this person was in the hospital for a full week. So when you think about those things and you look at that, why isn't it worth the investment in yourself to take care of you and yours so that you don't have to go through that, if it is at all possible? And a lot of it is an awareness that you do take care of the body, because it is amazing how it rejuvenates itself. Now, before I forget, for those of you in Western Washington, the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair is going to be happening the first 3 weekends in August at the Kelly Farm in Bonnie Lake, Washington, and I have some free passes. Since the last time I announced that I had free passes, a number of them have already flown out in the mail, and if you would like to get a free family pass to this marvelous event, then I want you to call my office at 253-582-5604 or send me an email and say, Donna, I'd love a free family pass. Now, the email is donna@delphiinternational.com or donnasebo@comcast.net. Either one of those emails, get something to me so I can get it off in the mail. My goodness, it's just around the corner. This Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair is absolutely awesome. It is so much fun. I will have a booth there. I'll be doing many readings for people, plus I'll have all kinds of books and other things. Oh, and I'm going to have copies of a new production that I've done called The Miracle of a Penny, so that'll be there as well. It's come out in a CD form. So anyway, give me a buzz today if you would like to chat, 888-627-6008. Robert Louis Stevenson. This is a man that was absolutely incredible as a writer, and he had this extremely rich imagination. However, he said that he had brownies, little people, brownies, who helped him in his dreams, because that's where he got a lot of his plots. Let's step back in time to 1886. It's winter, January of that year. The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde was released on both sides of the Atlantic, and at the time, and this is phenomenal at the time, it sold 40,000 copies in 6 months. Now, if he had been in our age and it had been that successful, it would have been millions. But being that was the time, and remember, they didn't have communication like we did, that was an incredible thing. He said that it was successful because of these little people, these little brownies. He said they helped him with his plots. Often the stories, when he first got them, were chaotic. But then they evolved into these wonderful panoramic storylines. And he actually, in his mind, would tell his little helpers, these little brownies, that's what he called them. He said they would send him different endings. He would have dreams that would show him all kinds of different things, and so he'd write it down, and he'd have his different endings to his stories. Now, this one winter, he was really in need of fun, and he wanted to write about what we would call the bipolar effect within a human being. Now, he had written a story a short time before, and it was called The Traveling Companion, and it had been rejected. And the person who wrote him the rejection notice said, this is a marvelous idea, but your plot is just too weak. So Robert Louis Stevenson spent 2 days trying to bring fresh inspiration to the story that he had written. On the third night, after working on the story for 2 days, on the third night afterwards, he reread the tale and called for help from his inner night shift before he fell asleep. Now, isn't that a unique way of describing something? When he went to sleep, he wanted his brownie helpers to assist him. So this is what occurred. This is what he dreamt. Hyde, pursued for some crime, took the powder and underwent the change in the presence of his pursuers. He admonished his wife for waking him from his nightmare, and later, upon waking of his own accord, cried out, "I have got my shilling." Now, it was another 3 days. Stevenson was doing nothing but writing and writing and writing and writing, because this panoramic movie had been in his head. He managed to get downstairs, read the book, half of it, out loud to his family, and then disappeared into a dream again, awakening, and finished the rest of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Fascinating stuff, isn't it? The mind is a phenomenal instrument, and we just have no idea what can be done with it, how we can utilize it to its greatest capacities. It's always a learning curve. And dreams are fascinating. They really, really are. Oh, by the way, I want to share with you today, and don't let me forget, if you want to give me a buzz, call me at 888-627-6008. I have a friend by the name of Mary that gave me an absolutely awesome cheesecake recipe, and I wanted to share it with you. Because if you're a cheesecake fan like I am, you just know that to a good cheesecake, you can buy these package mixes, but I'm telling you, they're not always going to turn out very good. However, my girlfriend had this recipe. She said, "Donna, it's a winner, and there's things you can do with it," but she said, "Trust me on this, it is scrumptious," and it is. Let me give you this recipe. She called it the Lavender Basket Cheesecake. You're going to need 8 ounces of cream cheese, 2 eggs, half a cup of sugar, half a teaspoon of vanilla, and 1/8 teaspoon of salt. Now, all the ingredients should be at room temperature. You combine them and beat them unmercifully, is how she wrote out the recipe. She said, you beat it unmercifully, so thank God for electric mixers. And you let this stuff beat, scraping down every once in a while, the mixture. You let it beat for 10 minutes. So turn on your mixer, let it go, scrape it down every couple of minutes, set your timer, you're busy with something else. It has to be smooth enough where it's going to blister. So it'll pop bubbles and blister. Then you use a graham cracker crust. Now you can buy one at the store, you can use your favorite. And you pour it into your graham cracker crust, and you bake it at 250 degrees for 45 minutes to 1 hour. It needs to set like a custard would set. And if you put a knife into it, into the middle, it will come out clean. And then you let it cool for 10 minutes. Now, while it's cooling, you want to put something on the top. Now, maybe you just like your cheesecake plain. Great, then just leave it there, or put just some sour cream on top of it if you want. However you like it. But if you want to do something that's going to make it extra special, take a pint of sour cream, 2 tablespoons of sugar, and 1/4 teaspoon of vanilla. Pour that on the top. Whip that together quickly. Pour that on the top of the baked cheesecake. And then you put it back in the oven at the same temperature, 250 degrees, for 10 minutes. Take it out, and you're going to refrigerate this for 24 hours. That's right. So this is something you make ahead. It's just fabulous. Now, this is what she does to add the additional yum to this recipe. She takes 1/2 to 3/4 of a jar of lemon curd. Her preference is Crabtree and Evelyn. She likes lemon, orange, or passion fruit curd. And you put that on top of the sour cream mixture that has been put on the top. And you have got something that people are just going to rave about. Absolutely delicious and so easy to make. So I wanted to share that with you because here we are in the summer months and cool desserts always are wonderful. And cheesecake, to me, is just an incredibly good dessert. But you could also do something if you had particular preserves that were really, really thick. You don't want watery preserves. But you could use strawberries on top of this. I mean, there's just so many different things that you could do. So it is something, though, that will just absolutely make a lot of people very, very happy. So I wanted to share that with you. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. Well, we've got some fascinating guests this week. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Bill Dean. This is an investigative reporter who has written a true story that is titled Smooth Criminal. It is absolutely amazing. This involves the CIA. This involves people in prison and so much more, and we are going to be talking about this. What spurred this story is that there was a woman that he met that for 20 years was terrorized by this smooth criminal. And then Felice Cantatori is going to be talking about Rocky Spirit. The movie's Rocky just inspired him no end. And so Felice said, I want to do something special related to Rocky. Well, this is just unbelievable, the story that he achieved, and there will be more of that. Also, we're going to be talking with Grade Richardson on Wednesday and talking about some of his poems that he has written. And his book is called The 13th Hour. Just a delightful young man. And then on Thursday, we're going to be doing a Best of Donna. I am going to be speaking in Silverdale, Washington. So we're going to have last week's show on that was with Nan Russell, The Titleless Leader, which I think you will really enjoy. Also, on Friday, we're going to be talking with Roy Stenman on the Big Book of Reincarnation. Whether you believe in it or not, the research that Ray has acquired is fascinating. And it just brings up more questions, I think, than just giving answers. It's really fun, fascinating, and interesting, and we are going to be discussing that. So that gives you some inside information about what's coming up for this week. And by the way, I've got some other little goodies that I'm going to be sharing with you, a story or two, so stay with me. We're going to take a break for a moment. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't forget, if you want to chat, you can at 888-627-6008. I'll be right back.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com, that's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007, that's 800-959-1007. 859-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number, if you'd like to chat with me, is 888-627-6008. This is the time of year where people are active in their gardens. And if you're like me, if you're out walking, you pass some yards that you go, oh my goodness, how did they do it? You know it takes a lot of time, effort, and energy. I know one couple that does a garden that belongs in a magazine. It is absolutely gorgeous. But I had to chuckle one day when I was chatting with the owner, Cheryl. She said, your garden is beautiful. It's a feast for the eyes. Every time I walk by, I just thoroughly enjoy it. She said, yes, but sometimes we feel like we're slaves to this garden because they have to be working on it all the time. Every week they're doing it. But it really is a labor of love. Well, there have been studies done. Don't you just love it? People are involved in studies of one kind or another because they have the time to do it, I guess. And they said there is so much therapeutic value with gardens, whether you are active in it or you just enjoy looking at them. But they found that there were certain traits with people. If people enjoyed growing flowers abundantly, if they enjoyed roses, there are some people that they just love specializing with rose gardens. Well, they find that people that do that usually are of a very good, well-balanced disposition. They say your appreciation of the most delicate and challenging type of garden to maintain suggests you're not only drawn to a flower's fragile beauty, you are awakened by it. Exuberant, get patient enough to tend to every bloom in your petal-packed garden. You have a sunny personality, and you bring to people that you meet a sense of joy. Your garden reflects you. Now, what if you're a person that does a lot with vegetables and herbs? You're a caretaker, creative. It's always good to grow your own food, and you're down to earth. You are literally and figuratively one of these people that looks at life for its real truth. And you are also an artist. You say it takes a vision to transform a patch of dirt and pile of seeds into rows of greenery that can feed your family, while also nourishing your creative drive. Now, what about water gardens? We don't have a lot of people up here in the Pacific Northwest that I'm aware of that have water gardens because we have a major problem. We have a lot of water up here. It comes down from the sky, and you can often get a very moldy situation. But those people that have flower gardens, or water gardens, excuse me, really enjoy them. And when you like a splashing waterfall or a serene pond, you're a can-do dreamer. The mere presence of life-giving water shows your idealistic temperament. Water's a dynamically deceptive agent of change, and it's capable of shaping surroundings in its own way and manner. And you like to sculpt your own future. You like that flexibility. You like the free-flowing aspects in life that give you the opportunity to adapt and change as you desire. And you're very optimistic and you work hard. Now, what if you're a person that is you do container gardens? Well, you're a visionary. You know, it's a container garden, according to the study, is an island of potential. It's a microcosm that, with a lot of tender, loving care, can equal, if not outdo, bigger, greener environment. You're detail-oriented. You see the greater potential in all things, not only containers. Where others see limitations, you see opportunities for growth. Bet you never thought of yourself that way. And last but not least, a Japanese rock garden. Boy, they take a lot of care. And if you're going to use a rake and draw patterns, very zen-like. There is a beautiful garden in California, the Huntington Garden, that I would recommend that you go to because you'd see all of this. And I just love it. Whenever I can, when I'm down in California, I try to make enough time where I can go visit. It's just breathtakingly gorgeous. But a Japanese rock garden, it's designed to inspire introspection. And it also stimulates the imagination when you're working it. How can that be done? Well, it's meticulously groomed. You're grooming sand and rocks. It allows you to feel more grounded. You need to pay attention. You're mindful when you're doing this garden. And you also attain serenity. It's a form of meditation, doing a Japanese rock garden. And the deeper you look within yourself, the more you see of life's possibilities, and the higher you reach towards the goals that you desire. That's what it's all about. So there are some wonderful aspects for you to be able to reflect upon for yourself if you are a gardener. But I will also add my own 5 cents worth, and that is if you appreciate beauty and you take the time to look at the flowers, talk with your neighbors, just reach out and touch them, that allows you to expand and to enjoy, and it helps you to get rid of stress, too. It's amazing how it will help you. And you'll be getting that amount of walking that Dr. Edlin had suggested earlier in the show. 1 million lives saved. What do you think you could do to reach a number like that? Well, you know what? It's possible. And this is a story about Rhonda and Darren. This is something that when I read it, I thought, it really does make a difference. And our technology today can take us so many steps forward to reaching more and more people. Touching the lives of a million, it can be done. It can be done. Well, Rhonda found out that Darren had stage 3 melanoma. And if you've ever known anybody that has had that horrific cancer, it's unbelievable what it'll do. And I've known people that have had melanoma, and I know one woman that just had an incredible story, and eventually she succumbed to it. Daryl had found a small lump in his neck, and Rhonda, like many of us would, said, gee, I think you've just got a swollen lymph gland. Well, it wasn't going away. Now, Darren had had a touch of melanoma before and had been treated. This lump was showing that it was in his lymph system. And she said, my husband, I just couldn't imagine that this had come back. We thought that this had been beaten. However, when they got the diagnosis back from the doctor, on the second time around, the doctor said he only had a 10% chance of surviving. Well, they checked around and they looked and researched on the internet. And he started an experimental drug, which at the time was the only new option they had available that they were aware of, and it was called interferon. Well, the side effects were just horrific. And it just was a very, very harsh effect on Darren. Now, while he's going through this, Rhonda gives birth to a new baby named Caleb. Darren took the time to create a memory box for his children. He asked her to marry him again, which they did. 300 people attended their wedding. But 3 months later, Darren was gone. Well, of course, Rhonda was just deeply, deeply grief-stricken. And she said that she just didn't know what to do. But Darren, even though he was so ill, had come up with an idea of creating a line of protective beach shirts to keep kids safe in the sun. this idea. Well, finally, the idea started coming back in her head, and she said, you know what? I'm going to do something about this. I'm going to create a shirt. She did. It was of nylon and lycra. They had the feel of a swimsuit, but were made out of a fabric that provided 98% protection from the sun's ultraviolet rays. She named her company UV Skins, and that's UVSKINZ. Set up a website, uvskins.com. She sold 3,400 in the first year, the second year, 25,000. She added an adult line, and today they sold more than 1 million shirts. She said, I think my husband would be very pleased to know that his idea is affecting the lives of over a million people. Donna Sebo here. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a wonderful day. We'll talk with you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Donna Sebo here. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.